This program is not being used to make diagnosis, administer treatment, prescribe medication, or order tests. The information contained in this program is provided as an educational service. This program is not a replacement for the relationship you have with your healthcare provider. If you have concerns about your health, please contact your healthcare provider immediately.
Welcome to Your Health Connection. I am Carlton Brown, president of Clark Atlanta University. This program was made possible by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University.
Greetings. I'm Dr. Shafiq Khan, director of the Cancer Center. The Cancer Center is committed to carrying out highly productive basic research in cancer cell and molecular biology, training of undergraduate and graduate students and research fellows in cancer research, and increasing awareness for prevention, early detection, and treatment of cancers which disproportionately affect the African American population. We hope to provide our audience with the most recent and up-to-date information on cancer healthcare issues facing our community.
Hello, I'm Barbara Washington. Welcome to Your Health Connection. Today we're discussing AIDS-related cancers and AIDS awareness. Our guests include Dr. Vincent Bond, director of the Research Center in Minority Institutions and a professor in the Department of Microbiology, Biochemistry, and Immunology at the Morehouse School of Medicine. Also joining us is Rodney Love, an LGBT and HIV/AIDS activist who volunteers with AID Atlanta and other major LGBT and HIV/AIDS organizations throughout Atlanta. AID Atlanta is the largest, most comprehensive AIDS service organization in the Southeast. Thank you both for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
AIDS, or acquired immune deficiency syndrome, is caused by infection with the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV. AIDS is the most advanced stage of HIV infection. More than 33 million people worldwide are living with HIV/AIDS. A little more than half of these people live in sub-Saharan Africa, and about half are women. According to the Henry Kaiser Family Foundation, in 2010, the rate of new HIV infections in America per 100,000 among black adults and adolescents was nearly eight times that of whites and more than twice that of Latinos. The rate for black men was the highest of any group. Black women accounted for nearly two-thirds of all estimated new HIV infections among women, while only accounting for 13% of the female population. I'd like to ask both of you, why do you think African Americans seem to have such higher rates of HIV infection? Who wants to go first?
I'll start first. Okay, again, Rodney, thanks so much for having me here.
I'm glad you're here.
Gosh, where can we begin? I think, unfortunately, just from my volunteering at various AIDS organizations and LGBT organizations, a lot of it still is that stigma that, you know, HIV/AIDS is a gay man's disease. And then you have the fact that we have a lot of African Americans who are afraid to get tested for a variety of reasons. It's way too much to explain here on the show, but they're afraid to get tested. And even though there's a plethora of organizations out there that's offering free HIV testing, I think the central part of most African Americans' lives that is not pushing the issue hard enough is the black church to push HIV testing. I mean, I used to be a member of a mega church here in Atlanta, and from my experience, I will never forget this. They had a health fair back in 2006, and I was asking them, I'm like, why don't you have an HIV testing going on here during this health fair? And she, her words, the woman who was planning it was saying, well, the pastor felt it wasn't an important issue. So when you have your leader of your church saying this, you're pretty much ignoring the fact that this is an issue in our community. And then, so if you have... And so a lot of African Americans see the whoever's the leader of the church as kind of like their leader in a way. So if your leader's not bringing up the issue and telling you the seriousness of the issue, then they might think, well, maybe it's not as serious as I think it is. So then, of course, if you're HIV positive, male or female, and you go to this church and they have no HIV/AIDS ministry, they're like, well, where can I go? Because some of them, even if they have a private doctor, are still afraid to get tested. Because then, of course, if they find out and their family knows, God knows the ramifications. They're afraid they're going to be disowned or whatever. So it's so layered, but that's pretty much, I think, some of the reasons why it keeps going up.
Dr. Bond?
Again, thank you for asking me to come on. So it's a very complex problem, and I think, Rodney, you hit on some of the things. I mean, I can add on. So I think poverty and racial, gender, and healthcare discrimination play a big role in driving other effects that eventually lead to increases in HIV infection. For example, they drive lack of information. They drive, poverty can drive substance abuse, which is a major transmitter of the disease, injection, drug use, et cetera, which also drives high-risk behavior.
Exactly.
Right.
Which then leads to extended lack of condom use.
Yep. It's like a domino effect.
So it's a domino effect, right?
Right.
Also, you have to argue that there's something to be said about the whole pathogenesis issue of HIV. So, for example, we know that there are specific HIV-related diseases that seem to predominate in our community despite your separating out all the other factors. So, for example, HIV-associated kidney disease seems to almost be predominantly in African Americans. So there's also an argument, I guess when we get later into talking about the inflammation and whatnot, that we seem to react a little bit differently than other groups. So I think there's also, and we don't know how much this plays, how much genetics and genetic markers play in all of this, and we still don't know. So I think all these things kind of tie in together and cause the, I think they're increasing the transmission rate in our community.
Very true.
When most of us think about HIV/AIDS, we generally focus on the deaths that are linked to the disease and the devastation that it brings to the communities of those that are a part of it. Rarely do we focus on cancers, you know, which gravitate to those affected by this deadly virus. We don't talk about that a lot. So today we're going to nail down, again, a working definition of HIV/AIDS, how it is spread, what its symptoms are, what its effects on the body are, how it's treated. And then we're going to talk about how cancer attacks victims of AIDS, because just the condition of the body itself causes certain cancers to gravitate toward them. Dr. Bond, help us understand the relationship between HIV and AIDS.
So HIV is basically just the virus, like any other virus. The difference between this virus and most other viruses is this virus tends to target our immune system, which basically is the body's defense. So it basically goes after the weakest part of the of your defense system. And once it disables that defense system, then all these other infections that wouldn't occur normally begin to occur in you. And so that, in a nutshell, that kind of describes the virus, I think.
It's almost like a computer. You have the gatekeeper system, and when the gatekeeper's attack, it opens it up, everything else comes in.
Exactly.
So how is HIV spread?
So today, the primary spreads are, primary transmission routes are sexual transmission and injection drug use are primary routes of transmission.
Right.
If you go back years ago, the blood transfusions, et cetera, but they've eliminated most, and those are rare now. So in fact, across the world now, most of the disease, HIV, is spread by sexual transmission.
And what are the symptoms? What do you look for?
So when you're first infected with the virus, within about 2 weeks, you get flu-like symptoms. You feel like you got flu, a really bad flu. You get, you know, all the symptoms of flu. You get swelling of your immune your glands, et cetera. That'll last for about a week or two, and then it'll disappear. And what that is the virus is ramping up in your body and growing. So that lasts about a month to 6 weeks after it starts, within about 2 weeks of the initial transmission. And then you go into what's called a latent phase, where the virus, levels of virus drop, but then they stabilize and they just kind of sit there, and over a course of years, they so slowly go up. And as they go up, your immune system becomes weaker and weaker and weaker. Hmm. And that's caused the latent phase. And usually the symptoms there are primarily swollen glands, and that's about it. And that can last as long as 10 years.
That's amazing.
Or it can be really fast.
And that could probably explain why some African Americans probably don't get tested immediately, because they just think it's the flu.
Right.
Right.
And they don't get tested.
Right.
So they're like, oh, I'm over this flu, or, you know, whatever, what have
right.
you. So they already have the disease.
Right.
Now, if by them not getting tested, let's just keep it real, some of them are probably still having unprotected sex, so they're spreading the virus.
Exactly.
So, you know, it takes it upon yourself. You know, as someone who works with a lot of young people, I said, look, if you're going to be out there sexually active, be smart about it. If you know you're doing what you're doing, get tested regularly. You know, I tell me every month, if you know you're really active.
Yeah.
But, you know, on average, 3 to 6 months. But, you know, if you know you're sick, and you know your body, you know when it's kind of off. So if you know, I guess I'm feeling that way because my mother was a nurse for 46 years. So she taught me, you know your body. You know when something's off. You know, like when you're about to catch a cold, you know,
right.
I need to take preventative things to help stave it off. So if you know you've had unprotected sex with somebody and you feel like something's a little bit off, go to your doctor. That's the simplest thing you got to do. But unfortunately, a lot of them don't do that. And again, we'll delve deeper into this later. But if you don't have those resources in your community to say, get your test, are you getting tested? How are you feeling? Then they won't get it done.
Okay, let's say you've got the symptoms and you haven't done anything about it. So what's happening to your body besides the swollen glands and the fact that your immune system is getting weaker? What else is happening?
So I talked about the latent phase. Eventually you go into the early symptomatic and then effectively cross over into the AIDS, phase where you have AIDS. And at that point, you basically have even more of what you had at the very beginning, more of those symptoms. You have thrush, which is marks on your tongue and your mouth. You get spots on your body.
Skin issues. Yep.
Skin lesions.
Lesions, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you get infected by just about any opportunistic infection that happens to be hanging around.
Okay, when you say opportunistic infection, what are you talking about?
So in your body, you always have bacteria and viruses. Mm-hmm. They're there. But as a healthy individual, they can't do anything. And so they just sit there. But once you knock down your immune system, the doors are open now. And they can just walk in and just hammer your body.
Wow.
And
like
so you get all
infections.
Right.
And yeah, a lot
right,
of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
You name it.
Yeah. So a simple staph infection, which if you had pretty much a healthy immune system probably could have fought it off.
Right.
Now, if your immune system's compromised, it's going to just flare up and make things just worse than they didn't have to be.
Right.
I was watching a rerun of Philadelphia last week.
And
with Tom Hanks, and I thought, gee, this was such an interesting explanation of how someone could do everything right seemingly with their life and not know about this disease. And back in the, late 70s and early 80s, people in the community didn't know what this disease was.
Right.
So they didn't understand what was getting ready to happen or what preventions they should take, what type of medications, what treatments were there.
Well, back then, there was really no medication in the early 80s.
No.
And then, you know, let's be realistic, the media projected it as more of a gay white man's disease.
Right.
So, of course, ignorantly, a lot of African Americans were like, well, this is not our issue.
Right.
So, unfortunately, until after Arthur Ashe and Magic Johnson kind of put a face to black people can get this too, it was kind of like, before then, they were like, oh, this won't happen to us.
Right.
But then when their faces came out.
I think Magic shook everybody up.
Well, of course. I mean, here's a mega icon in sports saying, I have this. So it had to force us to, like, we had to deal with this.
It was such a momentous occasion. I remember exactly where
I was too.
When he said it and what I was doing. Because he was so healthy. He he lived an active lifestyle.
Right.
You thought he was taking care of his body.
Right.
And he was a smart kid. So.
And I think the other thing that played into that is the political aspects of it. Because it was a gay disease and because we had a very conservative.
Yes, and that's very true.
Administration.
That's very true.
I mean, if you remember, Ronald Reagan never
addressed it at all.
He never said the word.
Never.
HIV.
Never.
And so that affected how the medical community and CDC and everybody else reacted to the disease. Okay. So probably making it worse than it could have been.
And what's so funny is it took like TV shows like Designing Women and Golden Girls who brought it up.
Right.
To like people, even though they did it in a very comedic way, not in a humorous way, but those are comedic shows, but they brought the seriousness of HIV and AIDS out when our president didn't even do it.
Right.
So that spoke volumes right there. So now, luckily, we have a more, people are more aware of it and educated about it, but just think, it's just, it was something.
Okay, well, getting back to magic and taking it forward, he had a certain regimen of medications that he told people he was taking and continues to this day to take. Mm-hmm. So what type of treatments now exist for attacking AIDS?
So there are so many drugs. There's no vaccine. So let's say that up front. Yep. There's no vaccine to stop the virus from infecting you. But once you're infected, there are methods that can be used to prevent. So condoms.
Yep.
Prevent transmission. Right. And they work very well.
Or abstinence, if you want.
Abstinence, yes.
Right. And then on the other side, for drug use, needle-to-needle
sharing program.
Exchange program.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exchange program, thank you.
Right.
It's
like one of the best working programs they've ever devised.
Yeah, and that was controversial, too, when they brought
it up.
It was very controversial. Yeah, I remember.
But now on the drug side, so the way they design their treatments is you learn about the life cycle of the virus, and you target different points along the virus life cycle. So most people know about the AZT, the nucleoside inhibitors, and things like that, that target the virus's ability to replicate its genome. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's a good point. We're going to pick back up on those because, as you pointed out, there are so many of those things, and we've got to get to all of them today.
Okay.
I'm Barbara Washington, and you're listening to Your Health Connection. If you'd like to listen to this program on demand, you can visit your Health Connection page at WCLK.com. We'll be right back after a short break with more of our conversation about AIDS awareness and AIDS-related cancer.